This is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a few minutes on Ozarks, students at the University of Arkansas School of Journalism prepare a series of stories about student loans and student debt. We'll talk with four of those 10 students who worked on the project in just a moment. We're thinking money for a different reason this week at 91.3 KUAF. These are the last days of our season of Giving Fundraiser, a chance for us to remind you that the reason we can bring you the programs you rely on here is financial support from listeners like you. Our largest form of funding, the largest part of our budget, comes from listeners just like you. You can make a contribution right now by calling our phone volunteers, 800-522-5823, or by contributing online at supportkuaf.com. The end of the year, 2018, is almost here, and we're asking you to keep KUAF strong with a tax-deductible end-of-year gift or monthly contribution. You and thousands of other listeners rely on KUAF. Giving today will help keep 91.3 strong and independent. You can call this afternoon, 800-522-5823, or you can give online at supportkuaf.com, and thank you. After today's Ozarks at Large on NPR's Here and Now, Richard Madden is known for playing the King of the North, Robb Stark, in HBO's Game of Thrones. Now he's been nominated for a Golden Globe for his role as a sergeant assigned to protect a politician in the BBC's hit show Bodyguard. A conversation with Richard Madden and the afternoon's news on Here and Now, beginning at 1 this afternoon on 91.3. And tonight, Arkansas Support Network hosts its annual community open house, a drop-in from 5:30 to 8:30 at the agency's home at 6836 Orchard Road in Springdale. Arkansas Support Network's mission is to recognize and support every person's right to be included in the life of the community. You can find out more at the Arkansas Support Network Facebook page. Fall commencements at colleges and universities are taking place this week. Many students, diplomas in hand, are now directing their lives toward a new job, and many of them will have a student loan payment due soon. Just yesterday, Forbes reported that Americans have about $1.5 trillion in student debt. This semester, 10 students in the University of Arkansas School of Journalism and Strategic Media compiled research for a series of reports about student loans and student loan debt. Robb Wells, assistant professor of journalism at the University of Arkansas, says he brought the topic to the students.
I wanted to have a data project that would be relevant to the students. And I think some of the past projects it took a bit to connect with. This one, I don't think there was a problem connecting or finding the relevance to it. So that, I think, made it a little easier and a little bit more relevant for the whole project going forward.
This week, four of the students came to the Furman Garner studio at KUAF to discuss their work and what they discovered. Chris Smith, Caitlin Lane, Samantha Van Dyke, and Katie Beth Nichols say their reports range from a primer on student loan terminology to examinations of how loan debt affects students at historically black colleges, beauty schools, and across the country. Chris Smith says students formed partnerships for their research.
Through those pairs, we were given specific angles to attack in student loans. That way, we didn't have such a broad spectrum like it had, as you said, the spine, but we still had a way to attack it.
So which angle did you and your teammate work on, Chris?
We were given HBCUs in Arkansas.
Historically black colleges. And you found out that students at HBCUs tend to borrow more?
Yes, they borrow more. Their default rate is larger. Generally, almost every negative thing about student loans in the HBCU world, it's multiplied by whatever the general median or average is. They're way above it.
And did you find out any potential reasons why these problems are magnified?
Generally speaking, HBCUs were created to give black students an opportunity to get a higher education, and studies show, like Pew Research, they've done studies that kind of show that black parents, they associate education with a higher financial bracket. And so they push for their kids to go to school, to go to school. And when a lot of them are first generation or they don't have someone to help guide them, they have the idea that education will help provide them wealth, but they don't know how to actually pay for education. So they end up graduating in a sea of debt, but with the idea that their education is going to give them a level of wealth they didn't have before.
Katie Beth Nichols, what angle did you and your partner work on?
My partner was Haley Ruiz, and we looked into kind of the overview story. So we had, we looked into some of the national levels of debt in comparison to Arkansas debt. And although there were other states that certainly had considerably more debt than Arkansas, we found that Arkansas residents still felt the burdens of student loans just as heavily as everyone else does because it's all relative.
I was going to say maybe other states, California, New York, or Texas might have more, but the incomes there are higher, right? And the
yes.
first jobs probably
so
pay
better.
So
it really is all relative. And this is a lower income state than some of those other larger states that have more debt. But we also found that in terms of per recipient, Arkansas is also a lot lower than a lot of universities. But personally, whenever I interviewed a lot of local people, they had $50,000 in debt, $60,000 in debt, although the state average was only $11,000. So it's interesting to see how whenever you talk to individuals based on the data, how that differs.
When you would talk to some of these individuals who had $50,000 or $60,000 in student loan debt, how old are these people you're talking to?
They were late 20s, early 30s, a lot of them. So they had been out of college for a little bit, but not that long. Like the one specifically that comes to mind, she has $54,000 in debt, and she graduated in 2002.
And so she has $54,000 still?
That's how she started off, right. But she's been paying, but she has to pay $650 a month, and that has definitely changed her lifestyle, she said. I mean, and some of the effects that we found are, you know, they can't buy a car, or they can't put a down payment on a house, or they're still renting, or they're having to live with their parents even still, and not that those things are necessities, but it is something that you associate with, I'm graduated from college, I deserve to have these things put aside. I should be past this at this point. And I think it's really frustrating for a lot of people that do end up with those student loan debts and those burdens that come with it.
Kind of goes back to what you were saying, Chris, the idea that college gets you to the point where you can afford certain things, but
right.
if you've got this debt saddled on you, it's tougher.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think a lot of people are really definitely feel that burden for sure from student loans.
Samantha, what did you work on?
Caitlin and I actually were partners. We had women and female debt. And so we saw that both nationally and in the state of Arkansas, there's about $1,000 more debt for women. And so we spoke to women and we tried to figure out, one, how they felt about that. Most women are really angry. But then also, like, how that affects their daily life. Like KB said, it affects just about everything, what you buy clothing-wise, what you can afford to eat, the kind of car you can afford to drive, where you live. And then for women, too, like, as mothers, how you can support your children, how you can support your family. So
why do women have an average of $1,000 more than men?
That could be different reasons. From they didn't carefully research the loan company that they were going to go through. One of our interviewees, that's something that she was strongly talking about in our interview with her. She said she had rather, back in high school when she was applying for all these loans and looking at schools to go to, she wished she had basically researched it more instead of just saying, okay, here's my loan company, I'll just choose them and then pay back later on. It's something that, like, as a society, I think we don't really carefully think about very much. We just say, oh, it's something we have to do in order to go to college, in order to succeed, so I'll pay that off after I succeed.
And I think that's something that we found across the board, that we had talked to so many people that honestly just wish that they were more informed and about student loans, about the gravity of student loan debt and how it was going to affect their lives, but also how they're going to pay it off. And other people, and we also talked to some financial gurus from Credit Counselors of Arkansas and places like that, that say a lot of people just don't know what they're doing.
Well, we're talking about people who are 17 years old, 17 and 18.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying there aren't wise, smart 17 and 18 year olds, but life experience isn't really, most haven't had that to completely understand what interest rates are and things like that.
But there's also just not, there just aren't resources that say, listen, these are your options. This is what is going to be the best path for you, because there isn't a cut and dry answer. It's not black and white. There's definitely some gray area whenever it comes to student loans, and that's definitely been a finding for me. And I don't know about y'all, but I think that that's been a major conclusion that we've drawn, is that a lot of people don't understand what they're getting into.
I think there's a thought, too, that that's something you can figure out later. we spoke to a girl who is about to graduate, and she said when she started out, she knew that she wasn't going to get any financial help from her parents, and she knew she would need to take out loans, and she just did it, and she wasn't thinking about the future or when she was going to have to start paying those, and she didn't know anything about defaulting or different types of loans. She knew nothing, and so once she started having to pay those off, she was like, wow, I should have looked into it before I took the loan out, versus trying to figure it out once I graduated and started to take that money back, because now she's not sure how she's going to go about living when she graduates and how she's going to start paying that.
The four of you were recently enough in high school. Was this something that counselors or people would talk to you about? It might alter your choice where you go to school or things like that? Chris, you're shaking your head.
No, like, not at all. I think my number one school that I wanted to go to was actually Howard University, which costs twice as much a year than it does to go here. So I had gotten in, I got accepted. I was super excited. But when I looked at cost alone, I was like, well, if I'm gonna have to take out loans, I would definitely prefer to take it out at a place that's like half the ticket price. And I think, and I can't speak for anyone else, but, you know, with the whole HBCU conversation, I think that in the Black community, people are just so excited if you qualify to go to school, if you have, like, the desire to go, that they're just pushing that you go, and they don't educate you, you know, on how, like I said, to pay for it. And it's definitely debt in general, student loan debt. We are reactive to it as opposed to proactive, so they don't, you know, let's look at cheaper schools, or how can you get scholarships, or just because you take out a loan your first year doesn't mean you have to keep taking a loan out. It's like we start digging a hole, and then it's like, all right, let me keep going. And then you graduate undergrad, and then some people don't get the job that they want, or, you know, it doesn't pay the way they want to. So then they go back and take out more student loans to get a higher degree, because there's this idea that the more education you have, the better your job is, the better the pay. So you just keep taking out those student loans to be in a better financial position. It's really weird.
We spoke to a woman, too. Her name was Haley Foster, and she was from Seligman, Missouri. And the population there is like 800. And so she said that at her high school, the teachers were just pushing to get anybody into college, just somebody. And so they, you know, she had a teacher specifically that, like, really pushed for her and really helped her just to get into the university. But she didn't have any idea about the debt or the loans or anything, and she said she felt really kind of led astray there, just because they wanted people to get into universities, and she is glad that she went, but she wished that they had, in helping her, had helped her with the financial side of it too.
Did you talk to anybody who might have reconsidered their original major because they were going to have student loan and maybe, you know, and I'm just going to be stereotypical here, but a journalism or art or English degree isn't perceived as something that might help you pay off. Did you talk to anyone who said, okay, I'm going to go engineering because,
well,
allegedly?
I had spoken with a woman who is currently a special needs director at a preschool, and she said, you know, during the time that she was in college, she wasn't thinking about that. And she said if she would be going, if she knew what she knew now and knew how much money she was going to be making and knew how much it would change her life having student loans and having the income level that she has. She said that she would reconsider, but she ultimately said, and I found this with a lot of people, was that it mattered more to them that they were happy doing what they were doing than, and understanding that, yes, I have this payment that I have to do every month, but ultimately it matters more to me that I wake up every day happy to do what I'm doing rather than, no, I'm in a better financial state, but I hate getting up and going to work every day.
Not all of your colleagues are here that worked on these series. There were also stories about for-profit schools and one about beauty schools and how people are coming out of those institutions with significant debt and difficulties paying them off.
I think one thing that was interesting about the beauty schools was that so many people went into beauty school and they still ended up with as much debt as people that were going into universities. And I think that's one thing, at least for me, I didn't know enough about even going into this. I just presumed that beauty school was cheaper because it seems like a technical school. It seems like something that's not lesser, but it's an art school. And so it seems like something that wouldn't cost that much money, but it actually does. And it still causes people to have those monthly payments and all that kind of stuff. But even worse, a lot of people aren't getting the level income to pay those off and are still getting those university grade loans, but are not reaping those university level income benefits. And so, and there's also not a lot of, there isn't beauty school loan forgiveness. There isn't beauty school loan aid. There, a lot of people, those people are having issues paying them off because they don't have the kind of help that universities realize that people need. But I feel like beauty schools are kind of pushed under the rug. And I didn't realize that until we had done this research and done this project.
Another thing that I found with beauty schools with my partner is we made a graph that showed basically where women are paying more than men in colleges and just seeing that kind of disparity and displacement. And we found that more men were paying their debts off at beauty schools than women. There was a higher debt load for men at beauty schools, which I found is kind of shocking. I remember talking to Samantha about this and saying, like, look at this. Like, this is so interesting to see, and I wonder why. And it's just something that, again, isn't very talked about. And I think that's just something that, like, a stigma we need to get over because it's something that everybody's dealing with universally. And I just think that this is something that we should bring up in conversation. It shouldn't just be something that we accept.
Did you talk to anybody who doesn't have a problem with it, either because they had full scholarships or they came from families of wealth or just managed to work their way through or whatever?
Yes. Me and my partner, Haley, we wrote actually a sidebar specifically on people that did not have debt issues. I talked to a woman who her parents, she's a teacher now in Bentonville, and her parents paid for her undergrad and her master's and her teaching certification, but then everything after that she's had to pay for herself. And she took it as, I don't want to have these loans. I've realized that my life is much better without these loans, so I'm going to take one credit hour at a time so that I can pay it off on my credit card. And she and her husband have decided that she's okay with doing a non-traditional graduation path for her counseling degree so that she doesn't have to take out loans and have to deal with that burden.
So after all of this, any ideas of what can make this easier for the students coming after you? Did any solutions pop up? I mean, the cost of higher education continues to escalate.
I think that the first step is education. I think that knowledge about this topic is really important, and it's something that's really brushed under the rug. We found that a lot of people have obviously these issues and it affects people's daily lives. But ultimately, I think the main concern was that people didn't know what they were getting into and didn't understand the weight of what they were about to have to deal with for the rest of their time in college.
My bad. And I think that conversation needs to start well before like your senior year in high school, because even talking to one of my sources is like the main person that we kind of talk about. She's 59 and she has $160,000 in loans. And like her monthly payment is not even $300 because it's income based. And so I think what's so deceiving about student loans is that while some people it might affect their lifestyle, but if they're doing it income based and you're not making a whole lot of money and they're just taking out just enough, you know, for you to feel like you're paying on it, but it doesn't necessarily heavily affect your lifestyle, I think that that gives this idea that it's not a big deal. And that, I just don't think that's okay. And I really think the education should start maybe when you get to high school, just little conversations about it, like a lot of things about, and I'm graduating in this week, and a lot of things about student loans I didn't know until we started this project, like what it means to default, what's a deferment versus, you know, what are all these things, what are your different options for where you can take loans out, you know, just there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had, but it's hard to determine when that conversation should start before it's too late.
Chris Smith, Caitlin Lane, Samantha Van Dyke, and Katie Beth Nichols are four of the 10 students in the University of Arkansas School of Journalism and Strategic Media who worked on a series of stories this semester about student loans and student debt. Our thanks to Rob Wells, Assistant Professor of Journalism at the University of Arkansas, for helping coordinate our conversation in the Furman Garner studio at KUAF earlier this week. You can see the multimedia reports at razorbackreporter.uark.edu. And we have a link to that site at ozarksatlarge.com. Ahead on today's Ozarks, what the Baptist Health acquisition of Sparks Health System means for healthcare, hospitals, and more.
From the employees to community members, they've, of course, quick to tell you how many CEOs they've had run through there in the past 10 years, are quick to talk about the transactions that those facilities have been through with publicly traded companies, so they're looking for stability. And we've had a tremendous amount of support, and I think people recognize, while they're not as familiar with our brand, out west, they still know us, and they've done their homework, and they're looking forward to that stability. And to your point, I mean, we pride ourselves in stability of leadership.
Will there be changes in healthcare or in Fort Smith? That's discussed in today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report in the second half hour of this Thursday, Ozarks at Large.
Thaden School is now accepting applications for grades 6 through 11 in the 2019-20 academic year. Located in downtown Bentonville, Thaden educates students from across Northwest Arkansas. THADENschool.org for more. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues its 64th season December 15th with two performances of its annual Christmas concert at Walton Arts Center. Performing a mix of holiday favorites under the baton of Maestro Paul Haas, musicians will be joined on stage by the SONA singers, area choruses, and special guests. Tickets available at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
And this is a Thursday afternoon edition of Ozarks at Large, sort of a gray, rainy Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. It is also the next to last day of the 2018 Season of Giving fundraiser for KUAF. 2018 itself is beginning to get away from us. This is the week when we remind you that your year-end tax-deductible gift is very important to your public radio station, KUAF, because listener support is what keeps us going. We have different avenues of support, but the largest one, the biggest part of our budget, from you and listeners like you. You can call in a contribution if you haven't done so yet, 800-522-5823. You can pledge online at supportkuaf.com. As we end 1 year and move to the next, many of us think about what do we want to accomplish in the new year? Maybe we want to, travel to Europe, or maybe we want to spend more time with family, or finally finish that stack of books on the nightstand, or get to the gym a little bit more often. However you spend your time next year, whatever reality turns out to be for the new year, we'll be there with you. We'll take you around the world every day. That is our commitment. That is our resolution, to do that again for 365 days in 2019. We'll stimulate your mind, maybe even while you exercise your body. It's a promise. KUAF will be here for you every day in 2019 with your support. You can make a year-end contribution and keep public radio strong. You can call us this afternoon with your contribution in the amount of your choosing, 800-522-5823, or you can make your gift online at supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
This is Elsa Chang from All Things Considered. You know, there's a lot about the news that is stressful, like natural disasters, wars, or scandals. And sometimes it can feel like that is the only news that ever happens. But there is so much news happening out in the world that is actually joyful. Like the hairstylist who sang to a child to calm him down.
The horn on the bus goes beep, beep, beep.
Or Sydney, Australia's new fairy that was named by the internet.
Please welcome Fairy McFairyface.
Or the bookstore with a public typewriter where people leave notes that are touching, but also...
lots of fart jokes.
lots of fart jokes.
There is so much happening in the world to smile about. And when you give to public radio, you help us report on all the news, the stressful and the joyful. Become a sustaining member and spread the joy. Here's how.
You can become a sustaining member or make a one-time gift. Either way, right now by calling our phone volunteers right across the hall from the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, 1-800-522-5823. You can also pledge online at supportkuaf.com. Your contribution, your tax-deductible year-end contribution, keeps your public radio station strong. 800-522-5823 or supportkuaf.com.
The holidays are an iffy time for diets. You could go through the season eating nothing but pies and cookies, and maybe you could binge on holiday music and just skip the news. But that wouldn't make sense for your body or your brain. So get a well-balanced meal with news, context, and a few treats, too. All Things Considered. Hear the bigger picture every afternoon from NPR News.
All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. When Pastor Clint Schneckloth, the lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville, recommends books for us, he minds books that cover current affairs, philosophy, science fiction, ethics, fantasy, theology, and history. Today's suggestion covers some of that ground, but uses a device we don't think Pastor Clint has discussed here before, jazz. His latest book is Playing Changes, Jazz for the New Century by Nate Chinnan.
There's always been this question in jazz, which is somewhat different than the question that takes place in other musical forms like rock and roll or classical, of is jazz dead?
I've been hearing it since I was aware of jazz. For 30 or 40 years.
Right.
Yes.
And a lot has to do with what you think jazz is. And it's always, on some levels, been a subculture, as it were. So this book is an exploration of really the most contemporary jazz and what he sees as basically this expansion and renaissance of modern jazz. And so he starts, of course, with the popularity of Kamasi Washington.
Yeah, that's the name you think of if you think of jazz right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there have been a couple of jazz artists who have taken album sales of jazz to the level of popular music, but very few.
Right.
Kamasi Washington is the biggest one. It's a
Esperanza
bizarre...
Spalding about 8 or 9 years ago seemed to do the same thing. Right.
Right. Yeah, in fact, you know, that the epic... That two-disc, three-disc thing sold so well, and it's just crazy. Like, whoever would have thought, oh, let's make a three-record album of jazz, and everybody will buy it.
Right.
But they did. And so he's kind of curious about the kind of the origins and the sources of that. And so what he does is he walks through over the course of the book with these different kind of like, There's a couple of things. One is there's been an expansion of jazz out of New York so that there's more centers to the jazz scene than there used to be. So he explores that to a degree. Then there's these different kind of like schools and approaches. You know, there's kind of like more what you might call art or noise jazz. Mm-hmm. And then there's stuff that's just much more influenced by the kind of like atonal stuff in music. And then there's some people that are interesting because it's not, you're not quite sure whether that's jazz or not. Like an example of that that's quite popular would be Mary Halverson, the jazz guitarist,
right.
You know, where she's not sure she's doing jazz, even though she would still be cataloged as jazz.
Right.
So he works his way through all of these different contemporary artists. And what I loved about this book, first of all, it was just a really fun read. So if you like jazz or if you like contemporary cultural criticism, it works really well on that level. But what I did with this was the entire time I'm reading this book, I've got Spotify over here.
I was going to ask.
And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to listen to that. Okay, I'm going to listen to that. Okay, I'm going to listen to that over and over again.
Here, and this is something that technology has allowed us to do, because if you read this book 20 years ago, you wouldn't have had that option.
No.
You might have been able to go down to your record store.
Right.
And if you lived in a big enough city where that store could, you know, confidently stock some of this music, then, but now you do have it at your fingertips.
Right. So a side recommendation while I'm recommending this is Jeff Tweedy just published a memoir. The
Wilco
singer for
Uncle
Wilco
Tup-
and Uncle Tupelo. And he talks about that early in his memoir, which I'm listening to on Audible because he reads it. And he's, of course, he's hilarious. So
great voice,
you gotta,
too.
He's got a great voice. You got to just hear him say his own memoir. But he points out that when he was getting into the music scene when he was young, so this would have been in his teen years in like the he was a teenager, I guess, in the 70s, that music criticism at that time still spent most of its energy trying to describe what the music sounded like, because the only way you could know was to read somebody writing about it, because you didn't have a way to necessarily listen to it.
Other than investing your money.
Right. You had to buy the record. But before you buy the record, what are you going to know? The album cover is about it.
Yeah. Right.
And maybe if you've got a nice record store owner who will let you put it on and listen your way through or whatever. But
more often than not, no.
Right.
Yeah.
So he said that, you know, that what's interesting about music criticism is how much of a shift it's made where it doesn't have to describe what the music sounds like as much anymore, because everybody can just go and listen to it. But going back to this playing changes, it's kind of philosophical. He really does believe that there's been this renaissance and that jazz is maybe more expansive and interesting than it ever has been. But anybody you know that likes jazz probably will end up wanting to own a copy of this book, because not only do you have the chapters that walk you through like stories about all these people that you know about because you've listened to jazz, but he puts a list at the end of every chapter about five albums that he thinks are the cornerstone content for that chapter. And then at the end, best thing ever, there is a list of what he calls the 129 essential albums of the 21st century so far. Anywhere from 5 to 7 albums per year from 2000 to the present that he suggests would be good listens for that year.
Nice.
And it's pretty diverse. Some of it's vocal jazz, some of it's ensemble or orchestra type stuff, some of it's real avant-garde, some of it's more post-bop, you know, it kind of depends. But I found it to be really helpful because it's not as easy to simply find or catch jazz. You have to work a little harder.
Yeah.
Spotify, you have to listen to a lot of jazz on Spotify before it starts making you jazz playlists.
Right.
You listen to like one Alice Cooper song and suddenly like it's...
Well, part of that I think is the number of people that go searching.
Right.
Far more people are going to go searching for mainstream music than jazz.
Right.
So the algorithm just has to take longer. All right. And that is called Playing Changes.
Playing Changes. Yeah.
Nate Chinnan. Pastor Clint Schneckloth is lead pastor at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Fayetteville, and he frequently suggests books for us to read. Today, he recommended Playing Changes, Jazz for the New Century by Nate Chinnan. This is Ozarks at Large.
During this season of giving, we're teaming up with the West Mountain Brewery in Fayetteville. Each December, the management and staff hold a non-perishable food drive for the Fayetteville Veterans Administration's food pantry. The aim? To stock up the pantry so that it will remain full for veterans the entire year long. If you have the means, please think about dropping off your non-perishable food item under the Giving Tree at KUAF
Or stop by West Mountain Brewery on the square in Fayetteville. The Giving Tree at KUAF Public Radio, where local matters.
This is the Season of Giving fundraiser at 91.3 KUAF. And it's when we remind you that at the end of the year, a tax-deductible gift to KUAF in the amount of your choosing helps keep 91.3 KUAF strong. Now, I know you've been bombarded with a lot of information over the previous 11 and a half months of 2018. Not all of it is accurate. At KUAF and NPR News, we dig into information to sort out the fiction so you get the facts. All year, you've turned to public radio on 91.3 for reliable news and reliable information. This afternoon, we're turning to you. You can make a tax-deductible year-end contribution to support real journalism, public radio journalism, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. We do have phone volunteers in out of the rain this afternoon. You can call them at 1-800-522-5823. You can also make a gift at our website, supportkuaf.com. And a reminder, a contribution during this Season of Giving fundraiser of $45 or more means, if you'd like, we will send you a KUAF mug, white coffee mug with our logo on it. And for a gift of $250 or more, one of those limited edition KUAF 2018 live CDs. 13 performances from great musicians like Shannon Wurst and National Park Radio and Willie Carlisle, recorded exclusively for KUAF shows inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. 13 of those collected on a once-in-a-lifetime CD. We'll send that to you for a gift of $250 or more, or if you sign up as a contributing sustainer at $20 a month. 800-522-5823, or you can also pledge online at any time at supportkuaf.com.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, and I talk a lot for my job, asking questions, pushing for answers, leading discussions, but most of the time, I'm not thinking about what I'm going to say next. I'm listening, just like you. Together, we listen to people who call in to share their experiences. We listen to experts who break things down and guests from all walks of life who help us understand why these stories matter to them and to their communities. And when we listen deeply. That means hearing more than just the statement someone's making. It's about hearing themes, context, and a broader perspective. Every time you listen to public radio, you learn, and you feel, too. You feel compassion and joy and a connection to other people and places. That's time well spent. So please, do what you can to support listening and learning deeply. Here's how.
You can call us, 800-522-5823, or you can pledge online at supportkuaf.com. About 14% of KUAF's budget comes from the University of Arkansas. The University of Arkansas owns the license for KUAF. 86% of our budget, we raise ourselves, some of it through grants, but the biggest slice of our budget pie comes from you and listeners like you. You determine the value of public radio in your life, knowing that you can tune in to All Things Considered, Morning Edition, and Ozarks at Large every day. You also know your budget. We encourage you to examine both the value and your budget, and then make a contribution, tax-deductible year-end contribution, to your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. Again, phone volunteers right across the hall from the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to take your call, 800-522-5823, or supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
The Rave Cultural Foundation presents Navarasa Margam and An Evening Filled with Emotions Through Dance, Saturday, December 15th, from 3 to 5:30 p.m. at Old High Middle School in Bentonville. This production will explore the 9 human emotions through interpretive dance. Tickets and information at Facebook/RAVE Cultural Foundation. It's time for the annual KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway. It's your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include Fayetteville Roots Fest, Community Creative Center, Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, Pack Rat Outdoor Center, and more. Winners announced Friday, December 14th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com to register or for more information.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, what can it mean to dance?
It's content, it's satisfaction, it's touching the heaven, and It's a bliss. It's a pure bliss. For me, dance is my God.
A weekend performance of traditional Indian dance explained and celebrated on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. On the program today, we've got some November numbers from the residential real estate market and a conversation with Baptist Health CEO Troy Wells, who will discuss his hospital system's acquisition of two hospital campuses in the Fort Smith region. And BNSF Logistics is growing in Springdale. All of those stories are just ahead after the break on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. We'll be right back.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Realtors in Benton and Washington counties combined to sell 9,264 homes through the first 11 months of 2018. That's about 2% ahead of last year's pace through November. That's according to the latest data from the Matrix Multiple Listing Service. The combined sales volume from those home sales is up 8.2% in the same 11 months, from $2.01 billion in 2017 to $2.18 billion in 2018. The median selling prices through November, that's the middle price of the market, also continued to climb in the past 12 months, up nearly 5% to $199,000 in Benton County, and up about 6% to $189,000 in Washington County. Home builders are doing their part to keep up with the demand. According to the most recent data through October, residential building permits in the region's four largest cities were up nearly 9% from a year ago. By city, compared with 2017 activity, home building is up sharply in Fayetteville, is down in Springdale, and is essentially flat in Bentonville and Rogers. We've got more numbers on the region's residential building activity in the current issue of the Business Journal. Just go online and check out the digital version for free at nwabusinessjournal.com. Baptist Health CEO Troy Wells said his hospital system's acquisition of two campuses in the Fort Smith region was tricky due to negotiations with a publicly traded company. But he expects a period of stability will guide the transition. Appearing on this week's edition of Talk Business and Politics, Wells said that purchasing Sparks Health System in Fort Smith and Van Buren from publicly traded Franklin, Tennessee-based Community Health Systems left a few unknowns that made the deal a bit more difficult to close. Let's listen.
It was not without a lot of due diligence, a lot of time and thought, but you know, the thing that was really interesting about this one that's been different for us is dealing with a publicly traded company. So there's a lot you don't have access to during due diligence because they can't let anybody know you're doing it.
Yeah, they'd have to disclose that in some SEC filing.
So you don't get a lot of context and culture questions answered. You get numbers, and that makes it a little bit difficult for us. But it turned out to be a really great decision.
After announcing the purchase in July, the two hospital groups closed their deal on November the 1st, which added nearly 600 beds and 1,600 employees to the Baptist Health Network. Little Rock-based Baptist Health operates 11 hospitals and employs more than 11,000 workers. Wells said he is on a listening mission right now as Baptist and Sparks integrate. He expects nothing dramatic on the surface to change with operations in the short term.
From the employees to community members, they've, of course, quick to tell you how many CEOs they've had run through there in the past 10 years, are quick to talk about the transactions that those facilities have been through with publicly traded companies. So they're looking for stability. And, you know, we've had a tremendous amount of support. And I think people recognize, while they're not as familiar with our brand, out west, they still know us, and they've done their homework, and they're looking forward to that stability. And to your point, I mean, we pride ourselves on stability of leadership and culture, and the staff and the community recognize it and are wanting that.
So you do have to look at some things and say, we do see some room for improvement in here. You alluded to that earlier.
Right.
What's going to change?
Nothing dramatic on the surface. You know, again, back to the due diligence, there's a lot we couldn't learn before we actually had to sign the asset purchase agreement, which was kind of crazy for us. But, you know, we're in the process of getting to know the people, getting to know the medical staff, getting to know the needs in the community that we can help meet as part of our faith-based mission. I mean, that's real important to us. And so that'll take a little bit of time. The big priority right now is just a transition. As you know, when you acquire another business, there's a period of time where getting new systems in place and integrating the business is really, you know, the first step you got to take. But certainly we're on a listening mission right now.
Wells also discussed the dynamics of the always evolving healthcare industry. With changes in Congress, an upcoming legislative session, and a variety of legal and regulatory battles taking place, he said there's a lot to monitor, starting first with the Affordable Care Act.
Probably the biggest one is if the individual mandate ends up throwing the whole thing out. That could be pretty disruptive. And then it's back to more lawsuits, I suspect, which
is
what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I think it'll be an appellate process.
Yeah, there will be.
I can't imagine that the lower court is the final word on that. So
the overall big concern, short of it just totally imploding, would be continued erosion in the number of people that have coverage as a result of the law. So if that continues to erode, then it becomes less effective.
We're in an enrollment period right now, so we really won't have those numbers for a few more weeks. So anything that you're seeing preliminarily that is encouraging?
I have not seen those numbers. I'm cautious in observation of the Arkansas Works piece of that, and that the people who are rolling off, we're up to, I think, a little over 12,000 people now that have rolled off. If that continues at the pace it's been on, that raises quite a few concerns. And I think it's just real important that we support our legislator and our governor to make sure that we take steps to not have people roll off inappropriately.
Yeah, and I have pried a little bit on those numbers, and about a third of those numbers that have rolled off, they just don't have any information on them.
Right. I mean,
that's the problem, is
yeah.
They haven't been able to connect with them. They've moved away. They've dropped out of the system and off the planet, quite
mm-hmm.
frankly. I guess the governor has told me that where he is watching is, are we seeing ER visits ramp up? Because
right.
that might be where people enter the system if they've lost their
Yeah, uncompensated care in
yeah.
the ER.
Are you seeing that?
No, we haven't seen that change yet. There's probably going to be a lag. You know, people lose coverage, and then at some point in the future, they have a
yeah.
need.
Is that a good bellwether, do you think?
The numbers are so small in the whole scheme of things. You could look at maybe a facility's ER, one place, and recognize a small change, a small shift. But in the whole state of Arkansas, I think it'd be hard to tie uncompensated care to just one thing like ER visits.
Yeah.
And that is Troy Wells, the CEO of Little Rock-based Baptist Health. For more, you can watch that entire interview with Roby Brock on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. We will leave you today with news of business growth in Springdale. Transportation services provider BNSF Logistics is planning to double the office space at its U.S. headquarters along Interstate 49 in Springdale. The company will build a 30,000-square-foot office on nearly 3 acres on South 48th Street. That's right next to its existing 30,000-square-foot office building, which opened 3 years ago this month. Construction is expected to begin right away with a completion date sometime in the fall of 2019. And that's all the time we have today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. We appreciate you tuning in. Remember to keep up with our reporting at nwabusinessjournal.com, and you can follow us on social media by searching NWABJ at both Facebook and Twitter. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
And And a quick reminder that Ozarks at Large does not just come to you over the airwaves at noon and 7 Monday through Friday, as well as Sunday mornings at 9 on weekend Ozarks at Large. We're also available to you at ozarksatlarge.com. At our website, you can find complete editions of recent episodes of Ozarks at Large, as well as individual stories, interviews, and features. And we provide links so you can share those individual stories, interviews, and features with friends, families, even strangers through social media or email. OzarksAtLarge.com.
Usually in war zones, the most courageous acts happen off the battlefield.
You know, I remember during the war in Sierra Leone just meeting this woman, just a neighborhood woman who sheltered all the local kids. She wasn't doing it for money, and she wasn't doing it for any reason other than she could.
I'm Guy Raz. Stories of courage. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday afternoon at 1 on 91.3 KUAF. TED, one of the weekend programs we bring you that expands your world, lets you think about things differently. And one of the programs we bring you on the weekend, that comes with a price tag. We are committed to not just bringing you great radio programming Monday through Friday, but throughout the weekend with On the Media, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the TED Radio Hour, Weekend Ozarks at Large, and much more. If you appreciate having public radio there for you all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, please remember to keep the lights on, to keep those programs of interest on the weekend coming to you. We have to rely on you and thousands of listeners like you to provide us money to pay for those programs and to pay for the electric bill. If you haven't contributed during this end-of-year Season of Giving fundraiser, we're making it very easy to do so. You can just go online to supportkuaf.com or call the phone volunteers that I can see right through my studio window here at KUAF at 800-522-5823. 800-522-5823. Or supportkuaf.com, and thank you.
Whether you realize it or not, the relationships you have with the people in your life are constantly changing. For better or worse, it's a natural part of life. I'm Shankar Vedantam, and there's one relationship you can always rely on, your relationship with public radio. You listen for thoughtful news and conversations, and those only get better with your support. This relationship matters, so please show your support today.
And you can support your public radio station right now. This is the penultimate day of our Season of Giving fundraiser. You can call us right now, 800-522-5823. You can support us online at supportkuaf.com. Thank you so much if you have already called or supported. If you'd like to become a sustaining member and give a little bit each month, you can do that as well at 800-522-5823 or supportkuaf.com. Before we end this edition this afternoon of Ozarks at Large, just a few facts about how we pay for public radio. The fiscal year is July 1 through June 30, and we'll spend about $1.2 million during this fiscal year. University of Arkansas owns KUAF. They provide about 14% of our budget. We then raise the rest, 86%. That's over $1 million. Some of that money comes from grants. A big chunk comes from local businesses that support the station with their program underwriting. We appreciate that very much. But the largest part of our budget comes from you, listeners just like you, listeners who value the public radio programming that we broadcast every day on 91.3. We get $10 donations. We get $10,000 donations. But our goal is to raise $600,000 from all KUAF listeners. You know best what you can afford. We all work together to make sure that this public radio station stays strong and independent for you. 600,000 from listeners, it's a big number. That means thousands of listeners donating a variety of amounts will be needed to help us hit that goal, and we need your help. You can call us this afternoon during this Season of Giving fundraiser and make your pledge of support, 800-522-5823. You can also make a gift online at supportkuaf.com. Timothy Dennis mastered the show today. Big thanks to Paul Gatling, Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. We're back tomorrow, noon and 7, with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday.